everybody. Welcome again to The White Flag, a podcast about what it means practically to surrender to Jesus daily amidst our hurried, manic, control-obsessed world. I'm your host, Jonathan Moynihan, stationed right here in Baltimore, Maryland. And together now, this is the 20th episode. We're all about one thing: drawing out the courage within you to protest the pace and volume of our digital age and find rest and joy and delight by simply being with Jesus and learning what does it mean to constantly surrender to Him. And we do all this because, as we've discovered and discussed, the real strength of our faith comes when we surrender to Jesus. And that's why we called it the show this, you know, this idea that the one symbol that could represent what following God faithfully in our 21st century context looks like, there may be no better image than the white flag, the universal global sign of surrender. As always, if you're new to the show, I would love to hear from you. I'd love to learn how you heard about the show, what God is doing in your life, and how maybe these ancient practices of surrender are impacting your faith. But no matter what's going on with you, I'd love to hear from you. You could hit me up at jonathanmoynihan.com. You could also click the link to that in the show notes today. But today, I am going in on something that is near and dear to my heart, because for the early part of my professional career and my studies in college, I was a part of what I'd call the journalism multimedia industrial complex. I majored in journalism. I was a freelance journalist in college. My first big gig was working for CNN. I was covering Barack Obama's initial run for the presidency in 2008. I covered the Democratic National Convention in Denver leading up to his election. You know, it was a wild ride. And then after that, I moved around a bit. I covered everything from politics, local politics, state education, local crime. I even had to do some weather. Don't ask about it. It's embarrassing. I'm sure somebody will blow me up about that later. The footage is still on the internet, unfortunately. I don't know how to take it down. But the news has always been a big part of my life, and I'm going to go in about the news today. Over the years, I found myself not so much a consumer of news as much as I've become someone who loves reading the news about the news. I mean, I used to even keep in touch with this guy, Brian Stelter, who is now some bigwig for CNN, and he has a show called Reliable Sources. But I used to know him like 10, 11, 12 years ago. We had a mutual friend because Brian did his journalism education at Towson. And so I knew of him and would email him from time to time. But Brian used to have a website that got him famous where he would report news about the news. And he was so good at sourcing and reporting that it got to the point where anchors would find out they were going to lose their show from Brian's website. So I was always early on in my career fascinated about news, about the news, if that makes sense. But I say all this because I've studied the news, I've learned how to produce news, I consume the news, I consume even more news about the news industry, and I've covered lighthearted, hyper-local community stories. I've been in the belly of the beast in the largest international news agency in the world at its premier Keystone political coverage of the Democratic National Convention. I've seen a lot of it. And I say all that to then say to you now, the news is bad for you. The news is bad for you. Now listen, before you write me off, I'm not saying that you should bury your head in the sand and ignore the problems of the world and create a secret commune in the woods of Western Pennsylvania like The Village. I'm not telling you to do that. That's not the call of Jesus. That's not what we see in Scripture. We're called to be engaged people of our nation while living primarily as citizens of heaven. I've talked a lot about that. But right now, especially in this moment in 2021, coming out of 2020, still navigating the COVID-19 pandemic, our cult, let's just call it like, I'm just going to call it like I see it. Our culture has been collectively chugging the 24-hour cable news Kool-Aid, and we've been all too happy to do so. And what it's causing is resentment and anxiety and restlessness and apathy and disassociation and the erosion of empathy toward our fellow man and woman. And all of this has been happening as we've increased the amount of isolation that we're in and then increased the amount of digital media we're consuming, specifically the 24-hour news network. And back in the day, when there were these famous anchors like Walter Cronkite or Edward R. Murrow, back when the news was, you know, maybe 1, maybe 2 hours a day on TV, the thing is, back then, there was an end to the news. The news was something that brought perspective to the world, but it was not the primary lens in which you viewed the world. But if you flash forward to today, the news and the media companies of our time are the primary worldview shapers of our digital age. I mean, the news today is not something that brings perspective to your life. It's something that really defines your worldview. I mean, I've experienced this as I've pastored people, family gatherings, Thanksgiving tables, church small groups, group text threads. All of them are now more polarized. All of them are all more ramped up. People are now walking on eggshells more socially, in large part because people are constantly being conditioned as daily disciples of our multimedia industrial complex. And I went over some of this in a sermon not too long ago. So if you go to Mosaic or follow our sermons at Mosaic, some of this might be redundant. But John Mark Comer, a pastor out in Portland, I really respect and admire, he originally kind of highlighted these things in a sermon he did a couple years ago. But it's just too good to not bring up in our conversation here. But he highlighted that, you know, when you think about the news and all this news and all this stuff, there are three social paradigms right now that dramatically shape how we process the news and our environments. The first reality comes from this guy named Buckminster Fuller, which I'm not making that up. He's got an incredible name. But he developed what's known as the knowledge of doubling curve. And he points out that basically all the information that could be known in the world right now is doubling every 12 to 13 hours. Now, back in Jesus's day, it took about 1,500 years for the amount of all the info in the world to double. But right now, because of the pace of our world and the amount of information out there, the amount of info in the world is doubling every 12 to 13 hours, meaning it takes less than sunrise to sunset for the amount of info to double. And back in Jesus' day, that would have taken at least 15 lifetimes. So that's social paradigm number one, that we have more information to be known than ever before. Now, the second social paradigm is that because there's more information out there than ever, we are more overwhelmed by all this information than ever. A Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist named Thomas Friedman highlights that our technology and information is increasing faster than our human capacity to process it. And that's producing a culture that is chronically behind the curve, where we live with low-level anxiety that is now the new normal. We are obsessed with FOMO. We want to be informed. We want to know all the right things. We want to have the right position on all the right things. And it's creating this numbing, buzzing anxiety that seems to follow us everywhere, as there is never a time where we know everything. We're always constantly behind the curve. So there's more info in the world than ever. We are overwhelmed by all that information. And then lastly, Neil Postman is a commentator from NYU who coined this phrase, information to action ratio. And he basically says that the tie between information and action has been severed, because information has become a commodity that can be bought and sold. Information can be worn like a garment to enhance your own status. He says, quote, "We are glutted with information, drowning in it. We have no control over it, and we don't know what to do with it." And if you just get honest with me for a second, like, if I was just scrolling on my phone a couple minutes before recording, and if I scroll on Instagram, all within 30 seconds, I'll see a recipe for buffalo chicken dip. I'll see footage of, like, a mother clinging to her child in the middle of the flood in New Orleans. I'll see the top 10 sleeper picks from my fantasy football draft. I'll see an ad for, like, manscaping or something. I'll see a headline about a shooting in my city, and then I'll see two people screaming at each other on a major news network about what to do with COVID and all the COVID numbers out there. And I see all of that within 30 seconds. And if you're like me, sometimes you'll see a headline that genuinely moves you to the point where you actually put your phone down and you look off into the distance and you think for 15 seconds, wow, that is so compelling, or that is so heartbreaking. And then sure enough, 15 seconds later, you're back on your phone scrolling again. And it's because social reality number three, we are used to hearing information now and doing nothing about it. We have more information to be known than ever before. We are overwhelmed by all this information, and we are used to hearing information now and doing nothing about it. And all of this is going on as this 24-hour news cycle keeps running at full tilt. And what this means to me is, despite all the low-level anxiety that this news media creates, all the restlessness, even all the hostility that it produces between people, perhaps the worst thing that the news is doing to us right now is it makes us apathetic to the world around us. I mean, back in the day, if your neighbor's house caught fire, you wouldn't go online. Let's say 80 years ago, you wouldn't go online and tweet hashtag no more house fires. You wouldn't say hashtag not on my watch. You wouldn't start a roundtable where you would discuss what causes house fires and how to stop them and what you think about house fires. If someone in your neighborhood had a house fire 80 years ago, you'd pick up a bucket and run down the street and try to do something about it. But there's so much going on in our modern news culture that it makes us indifferent to the problems of the world, because so much of what we see, we can't do anything about except pray, which is hugely important. I'm not minimizing prayer. You should know that if you listen to the podcast. But so much of what we see in the world, we can do absolutely nothing about, which then in us produces an instant reaction that when there is something we can do, our natural response is to keep scrolling. Our natural response is to not do anything about it. There's a great book I've recommended a lot to people in the last 18 months about this called Hate Incorporated by Matt Taibbi. He's a progressive journalist I've followed for 10 or 12 years now. He's the head political writer for Rolling Stone magazine, and now I believe he's an editor there. But it details, I mean, he is a member of the media, but he doesn't hold back. He details all the ways in which the media, by design right now, whether it's intentional or not, makes us despise one another and makes us more unhappy. He highlights that there used to be a time when someone could say, I read the news today, but now that's impossible because the amount of info is doubling every 12 to 13 hours. And there are just a couple parts of the book that are so sobering. I just want to read to you to kind of help build my argument. He says, content is designed not just to be lurid and sensational, but immediately disquieting from a psychological standpoint. You're meant to see something in the first flash that upsets you to the point of needing to hang in at least until mental balance is restored. The in-between lines of messages of most news isn't worry, 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 but stay, stay, stay. Anchors cast scolding, imploring glares at the screen, all but telling viewers that they'll be betraying humanity if they switch off. He says most companies don't want you signing off until tomorrow because they don't want you to even understand that you have an inner dialogue separate from the news experience. Click on, watch, read, tweet, argue, come back, click again, repeat, do it over and over, rubbing the nerve ends away just a little bit each time, which through each engagement, you're signing off over more and more of your intellectual autonomy. Dude, it's so heavy, but so true. And then lastly, here's the last one. He says, it will be hard to keep concealed for long the obvious fact that turning off the news results in an instantly positive psychological change for most people. If you want to be happier, if you want to live in a world that may be thick with problems, but is at least a sunnier place where people are more decent to one another and more willing to cooperate and show kindness, turn off the tube, or I would add, put down the phone. The news is bad for you, okay? I'm at a place now where when I meet with someone and through their bravery and authenticity and trust of me, they start opening up about anxiety and anger and restlessness and just this general sense of hopelessness or feeling overwhelmed, one of the first and most pastoral things I do for people in that moment now is I will ask them to whip their phone out and show me their screen time. I'll ask them to show me how many hours are you on your phone each day and what apps are you on the most. And I know it sounds weird and kind of creepy if you think I'm trying to, like, I don't know. But listen, if you show me the apps you use the most, I'll be able to tell what competing narratives are pulling you away from the story God wants to write in and through your life. So, the news is bad for you. Our social realities are making us overwhelmed by the amount of information. the news agencies, having been in them, do their best to keep you upset because the negative emotional triggers are what make you come back far more than the happy ones. Listen, side note, when people say, how come news outlets don't report positive news? It's because nobody watches. I would spend hours writing positive pieces about good things in our neighborhood back in the day. Nobody read them. But if it bleeds, it leads, which is why you have the news the way it is, okay? We are the problem. We are the problem. So what do I want you to do with this? I mean this deeply and seriously. I'm not saying this to be sensational or incendiary or controversial. But I think one of the most profound ways that you can surrender to Jesus in our present day is to limit your news intake. And to be more specific, to try to live daily where the amount of minutes you spend in prayer exceed the amount of minutes you consume the news. I believe this is completely possible. It is definitely doable. But my challenge is, would you evaluate the practices and rhythms of your life where your time in prayer before the Father, the actual seconds you spend with God in prayer per day, exceed the amount of minutes you consume the news? And listen, I've got friends. I know that like the third largest demographic of people who listen to this show are in Washington. I know it is almost impossible to get out of the Washington industrial complex and not consume the news. If you're a journalist or you work in media, I get it. The amount of hours you spend in media, you're not going to be able to pray more than that. But you know there is a difference between like working on media and consuming media and letting it get into you. But I believe it is possible to live a life where the amount of time you spend in prayer daily exceeds the amount of time you are consuming news that is relevant to your city or your state or the concerns you have for the hurting world around you. And again, I'm not saying don't watch the news, but I'm asking you to limit how much you watch the news, because there is a digital discipleship happening, and it's been happening for a long time. And I think COVID, like many things, just exposed what was already going on. For some of you, this is going to feel like a massive withdrawal, like you're stepping into this digital wilderness where you are not uninformed. But I want to encourage you, if you take this step, you take this risk of surrender, you are in good company when you do that. Because when you step into this digital wilderness, I believe you are being just like the spiritual desert fathers and mothers, those third, fourth, fifth century followers of Jesus who paved the way for many of these practices we spend most of our time together talking about. The thing is, when Christianity became legal, I'll kind of end with this. When Christianity became legal and became like the official religion of the Roman Empire, things started to shift for the believers in not a good way. Because for generations, the church was seeping its way into the empire, subverting the ways of the empire from inside out by changing people's hearts and minds with the gospel of Jesus. And it was just easing its way into changing things from the inside out, and it was beautiful. But when Constantine made Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire at the start of the fourth century, the church was no longer seeping into the empire. The empire began to seep into the church. And there were ways of life within the empire that were counter to the ways of Jesus that eventually became normalized and accepted among many of the church communities, because the faith of being a Christian became like an ethnic identifier, or it just became nominal, meaning in name only, I am a Christian because that's the official religion. But a radical obedience to Jesus, where you lived counterculturally to the ways of the empire, all of those things kind of got diluted over time as the popularity of the faith increased and as the church lost that secret, subversive, controversial, high-priced truth existence that it had for the first 300 years that made it explode. I mean, even things like abortion and exposure, which is the practice of having a baby but then exposing it in the wilderness so that it would die, all of those things, the early church was known for caring for abandoned babies. But exposure by church members in the fourth century skyrocketed because Christianity became a normalized cultural thing. And so, in fact, some scholars point out that because martyrdom, like dying for your faith, was very prominent for the first couple hundred years, But once the Roman Empire made Christianity the official religion, martyrdom was really no longer a thing. And because of that, there were many devout followers of Jesus who retreated into the wilderness and retreated into the desert as a form of martyrdom, where they knew they weren't going to lose their physical lives for Jesus, but they wanted to give their worldly lives to Jesus and live fully devoted to him in prayer, in withdrawal, isolated for a season, and then they would come back and live out the gospel and live out the Great Commission. So I know I'm kind of taking a couple turns here. You might be asking, why am I talking about people who did something 1,600 years ago in the desert? Here's why. It's because back then, many followers of Jesus who went out into the desert, these desert fathers and mothers who removed themselves from society to live in the wilderness to abide and connect with Jesus, they developed something called a rule of life. And this meant a daily schedule that was a set of practices and rhythms that helped create space for them to be with Jesus and become like Jesus amidst the pull and pace of their world. And these weren't like goals or intended outcomes or legalistic rules. These were daily expressed practical actions that helped them abide in the vine, as Jesus says in John 15, and really just helped them stay rooted in Jesus. And rule of life is one of the most ancient ways followers of Jesus have protested the temptations and rhythms of the world that they navigate to stay rooted to Christ. And so for some of us today, I want to propose to you a new rule of life. And this is just one of probably several different white flag rules of life that will navigate a little rhythmic daily practice that could help produce new spiritual formation in your life. But I want to propose for some of you a homework or a challenge or even to establish a new rule of life where you would evaluate, contemplate, and create a new rule of life for yourself when it comes to consuming the news. You might think I'm crazy when I tell you that my prayer time every day, my ratio of prayer to news intake is probably 3 to 1. For every minute I watch the news, I think I might spend 3 minutes in prayer. But that isn't because I'm praying for 6 hours a day. It's because I just don't watch the news very much. But you might think that's crazy, and that's okay. I'm all about baby steps. But how might in this moment God be calling you to quiet the noise within your spirit, to resist the temptation to constantly be informed in every single thing, to even ask God, help expose where am I actually placing my identity in the fact that I know a lot about the world and I know what's going on? Where can I sacrifice that and offer that up to you so that I can make sure I'm being discipled by the Holy Spirit and not being discipled by digital media? As a rule of life, is there a way that you could make the news subservient to you instead of the other way around? As I network with older, wiser, mature believers who are 10, 20, even 30 years older than me, there seems to be a theme that they are deeply burdened by the troubles of the world and informed about where they need to direct their prayer, but they don't have this restless panic that comes from being obsessed with the 24-hour news cycle. And I just want to be like them. And I want to help prevent us from the pitfalls that we're seeing in culture. And so I want to help all of us accelerate our growth a little bit by putting down this cultural conditioning from the news and adopt a rule of life where prayer becomes the thing that we do even more than consuming the news through all of the digital methods. Listen, if you're willing to take this challenge and you're willing to adopt this new rule of life, I would love to hear about it. I would love to have you contact me. You can click the link to my website in the show notes. Just hit me up and let me know how God is moving in your life. Maybe a week from now, 2 weeks from now, see psychologically if you are doing better, how you're doing better, what has it been like for you to put down the news and pick up that quiet, hidden life of prayer with Jesus. Again, I'm not an expert. I like to read from experts and then regurgitate what I hear, but I'm not the expert. I'm just so passionate, man. I just want to help people find rest in Jesus and quiet the chaos because we've got enough going on in here. We don't need to add more. So again, reach out to me if this has been helpful for you. Thanks so much for joining me again in our attention economy. I know it is an honor for you to spend any amount of time with me, so thanks so much for sticking with it. I pray you are well. I pray that you are in good health and in good faith. And yeah, just really honored by your time for being here with me. I'll talk to you guys real soon, and I'll see you again next week.